Thank you very much for this kind introduction. Thank you very much for the invitation. And I'm sure my English is as bad as your German. If you don't hear me, it's because of my cold in this room. If you don't understand me, it's because of the language. My title you see here, From the Yellow Peril to Z-Mouse and Spray Can, Venus Cybernetics and Zadeh Fazizet Theory. What I want to do today is I want to show you a link from cybernetics or from Venus' work to Lotfi Zadeh's Fazizet Theory, and I think people from NAFIPS, of course, know that story already, but people who are not in NAFIPS, maybe it's something new for you. Is this working? It's switched on, but it is not working. Okay, I want to start with a book maybe you don't know so much. It's the book before Venus Cybernetics. It's the book what was called The Yellow Peril because it was yellow, and peril because most of the students didn't understand what was written, most of the engineers didn't understand what was written in because it was so much mathematics. It was written during the war, and you see what Norbert Wiener did in this book. It was much more mathematically as in cybernetics, but he did the same things in a higher level, maybe you can say that. He wanted to unify communication engineering with the field of statistical time series. And he wanted to do that in theory and praxis, and the relevant methods for this purpose included filtering in addition to extrapolation and prediction. So, moreover, he fused these methods into into a common technique which, in the opinion of the author, is more effective than other existing technique alone. Predicting a time series, he said, or a message, could certainly not simply consist of its constant continuation. This would instead be a matter of statistical prediction, estimating the continuation of the time series or communication in most probable future pattern, while minimizing random error, as Wiener described the problem in greater detail. And here's the quotation. We have a message, which is a time series, and a noise, which is a time series also. If we seek that which we know concerning the message, which is not bound to a specific origin in time, we shall see that such information will generally be of a statistical nature. And this will likewise be true of our information of the same sort concerning the noise alone, or the noise and the message jointly. And the quotation goes on. While this statistical information will in fact never be complete, as our information does not run indefinitely far back into the past, it is a legitimate simplification of the facts to assume that the available information runs back much further into the past than we are called upon to predict the future. The usual electrical wave filter attempts to reproduce a message in its purity when the input is a sum of a message and a noise. And what he did now is he said, okay, this is mathematical stuff, and I have to go to a colleague of mine, and this colleague was Ernst Gilman, or Ernie Gilman. He wrote that he has to go to this book, Gilman said, and here you see the quotation, the problem of realization takes one into the theory of equivalent networks as developed by Gilman and others. So first of all, who was Ernie Gilman? And here is the biography of this man. He was born, you see, in Wisconsin. He studied electrical engineering and medicine, and then he became teaching assistant, but then he came to Munich, and that's the reason why I was familiar with this person. He was a PhD student of Arnold Sommerfeld, who was one of the most famous quantum mechanical researchers in that time in Munich. He wrote his PhD thesis in German, then he returned to the MIT, then he has a career as a professor in electrical engineering. You see the dates of his professorships. And what he did then, he wrote a lot of books, and he was very famous as a teacher in electrical engineering. Here you see the books he wrote, and you see a photograph, and yesterday in the photo show I saw a picture of Wiener and Gilman. I would be very glad to get this photograph if anybody has a relation for that. please tell me. So what is interesting, Ernst Gilman wrote the first book on communication networks. Volume 1 and 2 in the 30s already, it's the first book with their title. And you see other books, and one interesting book also is in 1953, Introductory Circuit Theory. And I will give you a quotation of this book later. First of all, what was communication theory in that time? Of course, it was not internet, it was not World Wide Web. Communication theory in that time was telegraphy and telephony. And Ernst Gilman did a lot of research work, of course, mathematical research work. As people who have been mentioned yesterday too, you see Carl Ferdinand Braun, the German researcher, and Campbell was mentioned yesterday already. And Wilhelm Kauer, who was a German one, and he came to the United States. He had a relation with the stuff of Campbell. And what you see here, maybe that is working. Yeah, what you see here is these electrical filters mentioned already by Wiener. And you see that what is a filter doing? A filter is doing, he's blocking frequencies and and some frequencies are going through. And you see different forms of these filters. They are blocking these frequencies or these frequencies and the other frequencies are going through. But you see there's a difference between theory and practice. What you see here is what a filter is doing, and here you see what he should do in theory. So there's a difference. And this difference is very interesting, and I want to quote you something from the book of Ernst Gilman, Introductory Circuit Theory. It's from the preface of this book, and it's some sentences. One final point. The teaching of this subject, I regard it as important to remind the student frequently that network theory has a dual character. It is a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde sort of thing. It is two-faced, if you please. There are two aspects to this subject, the physical and the theoretical. The physical aspects are represented by Mr. Hyde, a smooth character who isn't what he seems to be and can't be trusted. The mathematical aspects are represented by Dr. Jekyll, a dependable, extremely precise individual who always responds according to established custom. Dr. Jekyll is the network theory that we work with on paper. Mr. Hyde, involving only pure elements and only the ones specifically included. Mr. Hyde is the network theory we meet in the laboratory or in the field. He is always hiding parasitic elements under his jacket and pulling them out to spoil our fun at the wrong time. We can learn all about Dr. Jekyll's orderly habits in a reasonable period, but Mr. Hyde will continue to fool and confound us until the end of time. In order to be able to tackle him at all, we must first become well acquainted with Dr. Jekyll and his orderly ways. This book is almost wholly concerned with the latter. I'm content to leave Mr. Hyde to the boys of the laboratory. So this is the end of this introduction of this book. And you see what he did. He said, okay, there's a lot of stuff in the laboratory, but I, Ernst Gilman, I'm working in mathematical electrical engineering. And here is what a student of him wrote when I interviewed him, and this student, of course, is the founder of a lot of the fuzzy sets. He said to me, everything was idealized. Resistors, inductors, they all were perfect elements. So even at that point, I had some discussions with Gilman. I said, this is unrealistic. The real world is not like that. I mean, resistors are not pure resistors. Capacitors are not pure capacitors, and so forth. And I told him that I think that at some point in the future, circuits will be designed and analyzed using computers, even when I was a student at MIT. And he summarized in his interview, Gilman was happy with that world. He constructed the world by himself. It was a perfect world. Everything was perfect in that world. He was happy and so never considered noise. He never considered non-linearities. He never considered imprecision. He never considered those things. So it was an idealized work, a world he was happy. So that was a student of Gilman and, of course, a student of Wiener too. And this was Lotte Fizade. And here's the biography of Lotte Fizade. You see, he's born in Baku in Azerbaijan. I say he is because he's still alive. He's 93 now. He studied electrical engineering in Tehran. Then he worked with the US Army forces in Iran. He immigrated to the US in 1944. He studied with Ernst Gilman at the MIT, and then he wrote his master's thesis with Robert Fano, who was a student of Gilman in that time. And then he changed. This is not working. And in my interview, he said to that time, I came to the United States in 1944 to pursue graduate studies in electrical engineering at MIT. At that time, with the end of the war not far away, MIT did not have many graduate students. Just the same, it was an exciting place, towering as a center of instruction and research among all other institutions of higher learning in science and technology. Lectures and writings by Wiener, Gilman, McCulloch, Pitts, and others opened a window to the world of communications, control, computers, and cybernetics. The cold winds of the Cold War were beginning to blow, but the future of science and technology looked bright and full of promise. So then I said already he changed. He changed to Columbia University, and here's the letter of Gilman, who said to the dean of Columbia University at that time, to electrical engineering in Columbia University, that he's very sorry that Lord Fizade will change the universities. So he went to the Columbia University. This is a picture of Lord Fizade with, maybe they are FBI people, maybe they are students, I don't know. but you see, I have no idea which year it was. It's a gift of Lord Fizade to me, but I don't know the date of this photograph. So he started research in at Columbia. He wrote some papers. He wrote a paper in the journal Electronics. Here you see what is the topic, Moore Hartley Law. So it is in the beginnings of communication engineering, communication science. And I don't want to go into details, and I will give you the second slide of his biography. He wrote his Master of Science, I said already, at Columbia University. He wrote his PhD thesis. Supervisor was John Rye Fragazzini. You see frequency analysis of variable networks. It's the Wiener stuff still and the Gilman stuff. And then he wrote in 1950 a paper, an extension of Wiener theory of prediction. Together with Fragazzini is written in brackets because he wrote, of course, the paper and the supervisor was the second author. In 1952, he changed to information theory and system theory. I will go to some details later. Then he changed in 1959 to the University of Berkeley, and then he started with his work in fuzzy set theory. Somewhere is my clock, but I don't know the time. Okay, this is the memo of this paper I showed you already with Robert Ragazzini, an extension of Wiener theory of prediction, and this is what he said in this paper. He generalized Wiener theory in two ways. The first, the signal component of a given time series was separated into two parts, of which the first is a non-random function in time that can be represented as a polynomial, while the other part functions as a stationary and statistical random function represented by a given correlation function. In Wiener theory, by contrast, a non-random portion of the signal occurred only when it consisted of a known function in time. That was the first. And the second, the response behavior of the prediction time or the waiting function used to make the prediction should disappear outside a finite time interval. In Wiener theory, on the other hand, this time interval was assumed to be infinitely long. So these were the two generalizations. I will not go into detail here. I only want to show that this was a continuation of Wiener's work with Lord Fizade in that time. And here is the paper, and here you see two authors, Lord Fizade and John Ralph Ragazzini, that appeared in 1950. So, of course, he was influenced by Norbert Wiener. He told me he went to his lectures, and of course, he was influenced by his book Cybernetics. You all know what is the book, what is the content of the book of Cybernetics, so I don't have to read what is written here. Of course, he was also influenced by Shannon. You see this book or this paper. First, it was a paper in the journal on a mathematical theory of communication. And the already mentioned Warren Reaver today was, of course, the author of the introduction that was first in the Scientific American and then later as an introduction of the book that they published together. So what is interesting in this theory of Shannon, and what is interesting for the continuation of this history, is that Shannon wrote in the introduction this sentence: "The fundamental problem of communication is that of reproducing at one point either exactly or approximately a message selected at another point." Either exactly or approximately. And we will see in fuzzy set theory, we do it approximately. Here is what Lotfizadeh wrote, or he gave a talk for the New York Academy of Science in 1952, and here is what he wrote in the paper that was published later. The title of the talk is "Some Basic Problems in Communication of Information." And he gave a lot of remarks to these problems. Here are two of these problems. The first problem is, let X be a set of signals. An arbitrarily selected member of the set, say X of t, is transmitted through a noisy channel gamma, and it is received as Y of t. So you send a signal, and you receive a signal at a different point. And the question is it the same signal? As a result of the noise and distortion introduced by gamma, the received signal Y is in general quite different from X. Nevertheless, he says, under certain conditions, it is possible to recover X, or rather a time-delayed replica of it, from the received signal. So you have an operator gamma, and it's very easy in theory. But what he said is, of course, it's only easy in theory. In practice, in the laboratory, it's very difficult to have this operator gamma. You have to build a collection of circuits for that. The special case is the reception process. Let X consist of a finite number of discrete signals which play the roles of symbols or sequences of symbols. The replicas of all these signals are assumed to be available at the receiving end of the system. Suppose that the transmitted signal XK is received as Y. To recover the transmitted signal from Y, the receiver evaluates a distance between Y and all possible transmitted signals by the use of a suitable distance function, and then selects that signal which is nearest to Y in a term of this distance function. And then he gives some examples. What is a distance function? These are mathematical terms for distance functions, and he showed these distance functions, of course, in this paper. But then, and that is more important, he wrote this. Okay, first you see the distance function, and the distance function between xk and y is smaller than the distance function between xi and y. And so he says, okay, we take the nearest one. But in many practical situations, he wrote, it is inconvenient or even impossible to define a quantitative measure, such as the distance function, of the disparity between two signals. In such cases, we may use instead the concept of neighborhood, which is basic to the theory of topological spaces. So what he did here is that maybe we need a new theory. He said maybe we need a new theory. He didn't say what kind of theory, but he said maybe it should use a concept like neighborhood, and what he had in mind is something like topology. The second problem he showed is multiplex transmission of two or more signals. X is the set of signals X of t, and Y is the set of signals Y of t. And then he said, what you are sending two of these two signals, but what you get at the end is the sum of both signals. So now the job is to extract X and Y from the sum. And again, he says, in theory, it's very easy. You have the operators. Here you call them, he called them filters. You have filter N1 and filter N2, and they are operating to the sum, and the output is X or Y. You can see that here. I'm sorry for that. So here's a picture of his paper for the Academy of Science in that time. And he was developing now a kind of algebra of electrical filters, geometrical representations of nonlinear filters, and of course of linear filter. So it's still a continuation of Wiener's work in electrical filters. And here you see pictures from his papers in the 50s. So he wanted to establish an algebra of filters. Here is a paper handwritten from Zadeh where he started to consider stochastic filters and stochastic operators, because he saw, okay, it's not enough to have an algebra. We have to go very deep into mathematics, and he used operator theory that he knew from quantum mechanics. And then you see that he gave talks on filter theory. He became a member of the editorial board of information and control. So he came in the area of control theory. Okay, I skip this. And here you see one of the first examples of the journal IRE Transactions of Information Theory. It was started in the 50s, and he became a member of the editorial board of this Transactions too. And what is interesting with this journal is that in the editorial board of this journal, there were Shannon and Weaver. And both of them wrote an editorial in the 50s to the readers of this journal. And Shannon wrote an editorial in March 1956, and the title was The Bandwagon. And you see in June, the next issue, Norbert Wiener wrote an editorial, and the title was What is Information Theory? So what Shannon did in his editorial was he said, okay, I'm very proud. I'm the founder of information theory, okay. He didn't say that Wiener is the founder of information theory too. Of course he didn't say that. He said, I'm very proud on information theory. Everybody is using my concepts. Everybody is using information. Everybody is using the concept of entropy. Also in philosophy, also in sociology, also in psychology. But now stop it, he said. Indeed, the hard core of information theory is essentially a branch of mathematics, a strictly deductive system. Research rather than exposition is the keynote, and our critical threshold should be raised. So he said, stop this using information theory in other fields. I don't want it. Of course, you know, Norbert Wiener is the opposite, and his view was different. So 3 months later, he wrote an editorial, and he has written what he said. I am pleading in this editorial that information theory go back to its slogans and return to the point of view from which it originated, that of the general statistical concept of communication. I hope that these transactions may encourage this integrated view of communication theory by extending its hospitality to papers which, while they bear on communication theory, cross its boundaries and have a scope covering the related statistical theories. In my opinion, we are in a dangerous age of over-specialization. So it's the opposite, and people in electrical engineering and information science after this had to decide, will I go to the Shannon camp or will I go to the Wiener camp? And here you see some people, I show this not because of this, you see they are doing communication theory and they are doing statistics. Richard Bellman was a close friend of Lord Fizadeh, and that's the reason why I show you this picture. So people started working in these areas. And here's an editorial Lord Fizadeh wrote in the same journal some years later, you see 1958, and his title of his editorial was What is Optimal? And what he did in this editorial is he said, okay, we have to say what is optimal, what is an optimal communication system? But he said it's not very easy to say that because we have to say in which view is it optimal? And he gave examples. I only can show you a survey. He said there are different criterias, and because of different criterias, optimality is not a scalar function, but maybe we have to use a vector to use this word of optimality. So you see, Lord Fizadeh was very deep in this areas of system theory and information theory, and then we have this, it was the first journal paper I found in 1965 that mentions fuzzy sets. This is a journal New Scientist, April 1965, and this is the editorial of the editor. I think it was Nigel Calder in that time. And what he wrote here, I want to read here. Some of us have been looking anxiously for a more powerful way of dealing with complex, ill-defined features of the real world, including much of human affairs, which at present elude the grip of objective analysis. Obvious examples range from the variability of legible handwriting to the weighting of factors in political decision making. Now I think I know who has the most promising line of attack. At Berkeley, California, Professor Lotvi A. Zadeh has for some months past been developing a theory of fuzzy sets. It is a mathematical tool closely analogous to ordinary set theory, but instead of specifying that an element falls clearly in or out of a given set, one can say that it is partly in, ascribing to its membership some appropriate weight between 0 and 1. When Zadi's work becomes more widely known, many people, engineers, psychologists, and strategists among them, will seize on it eagerly. For my money, its implications are immense, and it has a straightforwardness characteristic of a big idea. So this was first mentioning Zadi's fuzzy sets, and what I found in his house and in his office is many of these programs of conferences where he gave talks on his fuzzy set theory. And then there appeared a paper, Fuzzy Sets and Systems. Just a moment. I go to this paper later. First, I want to show this, another talk Lotfi Zadi gave on fuzzy sets in Stanford in 1965. And I want to show you what is a fuzzy set. Okay, people from NAFIPS know that already. You all know what is a set. Here you see a set like you have given it in school, and this is a fuzzy set. So it's very easy. Boundaries are unsharp. You don't know where ends the set, where starts the complement of the set. Here is maybe more nice to say what is a set. Georg Cantor, a German logician and mathematician, said, okay, we need something like sets. The set of animals, there are cats, there are dogs, there are horses, they are elements of the set of animals. But of course, Otto Lilienthal, a telephone, a cannon, and some water is not an animal. So it's very clear what is an element of the set and what is not. Lotfi Zadi said, okay, we can do that. We have the set of animals and we have the set of non-animals. But in that time, in 65, he said, what is with starfishes, what is with bacteria? Are they elements of the set of animals or not? And he mentioned this motivation in his first paper. Of course, he was in electrical engineering. This was only motivation. But I think in that time, in the 60s, nobody knew if a bacteria an animal or not. So this is more mathematically. The definition of Georg Cantor for a set is a collection into a whole M of definite and separate objects, small m, of our intuition or thought. And you see, all objects have a value, 0 or 1. If the object is an element of the set, then it has a value 1. Otherwise, it has a value 0. Here's a definition of Lotfi Zadi for a fuzzy set. A fuzzy set A in X is characterized by a membership function or a characteristic function, mu A of X, which associates with each point in X a real number in the interval 0, 1. With the value of mu A of X at X representing the grade of membership of X in A. And you see, every object can take a value between 0 and 1. That is a small idea, and it was a small theory, and it developed to many applications. Of course, in usual set theory, you have to combine sets, and you can do the same with fuzzy sets. That is, of course, has to be. He defined what is an empty set, an empty fuzzy set. Okay, membership value is 0. Equal fuzzy sets means membership values are equal. Complement is 1 minus membership function, and containment means that membership function of A is smaller than the membership function of B at every point. That is easy. And what is interesting is how he defined union and intersection of fuzzy sets. And here he said the membership function of the union of two fuzzy sets A and B is the maximum of the membership values. And of course, the intersection is the minimum. That is a very interesting definition. I will say you later how it comes from. Interesting, because of course, if you have only 0 and 1, then the maximum is 1 and the minimum is 0. And if you have more than 0 and 1, but all the numbers between, this is more. This is an extension of usual set theory. So in 2005, we had 40 years of fuzzy sets. This is a paper he wrote in 1965. And you see, next year we have 50 years of fuzzy sets. And I think there will be a celebration like 10 years ago. This was 40 years in Beijing. They celebrated this theory. I wrote my book on the history of this theory in 2005. It appeared in German. And in 2007, it appeared in English. What I say today here is yeah, most of it is written in this book, so I don't have to go into details here. You see, I have a different view. I started with the prehistory. I couldn't do that in that talk. Then the genesis of the theory of fuzzy set in the 60s. Then some applications. I don't know whether I can go to this part here in this talk. And then there was an enforcement of the theory of fuzzy sets as a scientific paradigm. And since the 90s, I think fuzzy set theory is usual and normal, and it is going to be in every textbook. Okay, what I wanted to say in this talk is that there are three scientific concepts that acted as origins of the theory of fuzzy sets, and one is information theory that is related to Norbert Wiener, thinking machines that is related to Norbert Wiener, and system theory, maybe that is related to Norbert Wiener too. I want to start in the last 15 minutes with information, with thinking machines. You all know thinking machines, history of computers, started after the World War II, and this is the first big computer is ENIAC, and it was the first machine that was called thinking machines. Here you see some headlines in that time after the World War. People didn't know that there are computers, and journals and newspapers said, okay, we have these machines, and these machines are like brains. So they said these are wonder brains, these are electrical brains, these are mechanical brains. They said they are acting like brains. That, of course, is a very difficult question to say. I think they do not, but in that time they popularized computers as thinking machines. Here you see some books by Edmund C. Berkeley, Giant Brains or Machines That Think. That is the title of the book. So again, they said these machines are thinking machines. And here you see some comic. The problem is too difficult for one man. I will ask my electronic brain. So this is what was said in the 40s and 50s. And of course, we have the paper of Alan Turing, Computing, Machinery, and Intelligence. And Alan Turing asks in this paper, can machines think? And we have a paper by Lord Fizade in the same year. He gave a talk. No, he didn't give a talk. He wrote a paper for Columbia Engineering Quarterly, a journal for students in electrical engineering in Columbia University. And the title was Thinking Machines, a New Field in Electrical Engineering. So he said to the students of electrical engineering, this is the area where you will work. This computers is your area, and you have to study how these thinking machines work. Okay, what he said is a thinking machine is a system. It has an input and an output, but there's something in. It's a processor, it's a computer, it's a storage, and what is very important for Lord Fizade is it's a decision maker. For him, thinking machines are only thinking machines if they can decide. I cannot go into details in this point. It's very interesting in that time that this decision maker is very important for Lord Fizade. What he wrote in this paper is, the type of machine sketched above can be made as a crude or as elaborate as it may be desired. It is not fantastic as it may appear. In fact, such machines may be commonplace in anywhere from 10 or 20 years hence. That was in 1950. And he wrote, furthermore, it is absolutely certain that thinking machines will play a major role in any armed conflict that may arise in the future. He was right. Of course, he didn't know what will happen in that time. In one of my interviews, he said, in 1960, I wrote a paper entitled Thinking Machines, a New Field in Electrical Engineering, which as published in Columbia Engineering Quarterly. Like many others, I had greatly underestimated the difficulty of designing machines that can approximate to the remarkable human ability to reason and make decisions in an environment of uncertainty and imprecision. That's the reason why he developed fuzzy set theory. I want to go to that too. But first, I want to show you this. Another journal he wrote, a journal article he wrote 4 years later, and the title was System Theory. And what he said is, dear students of electrical engineering at Columbia University, you have to study system theory, and system theory is very easy. Because system theory is only this. Okay, you have this definition was from Webster's dictionary. A system is an aggregation or assemblage of objects united by some form of interaction or interdependence. He gave examples, a set of particles, a group of human beings, a complex of interrelated industries, an electrical network, or a computer. And what he said is system theory is very easy because the output is a function of the input, that's all. Here's the black box picture he showed. There are inputs, there are outputs, and we are not interested in what is in. That was in 1952. Then he became a protagonist of system theory in the United States. He wrote books on system theory. He wrote the book Linear System Theory together with Charles Deser, and he wrote a volume with Elia Pollack. Both are colleagues from Berkeley, and both books you can find in the bookstores today. So he was very famous for system theory, and if he would have never established fuzzy set theory, he would be famous for that. Of course, then he became dean at electrical engineering in Berkeley, and then there was an interesting symposium. This is the proceedings. It's a symposium on views on general system theory, and it was a little bit like an idea like this conference is, because they invited people who are doing research in system theory from electrical engineering, but also from sociology and psychology and biology and economy. So they thought, okay, they all are doing system theory, and let's bring them together, they have to discuss. It was a great disaster. They couldn't communicate. That's what the editor wrote in his preface. Was not very successful, but it is interesting because there was Kenneth Boulding, the famous Kenneth Boulding, who attended to this conference, and he wrote a poem to every talk he heard. And this poem was printed on the page of the beginning of the talk in the proceedings. So here is a poem of Kenneth Boulding to the talk of Lotfi Zadeh. A system, I cannot read it, but I know it by brain. A system is a big black box of which we can't unlock the locks, and what all we can find out about is what goes in and what goes out. Perceiving input-output pairs related by parameters permits us sometimes to relate an input, output, and a state. If this relation's good and stable, then to predict we may be able, but if it fails us, heaven forbid, we'll be compelled to force the lid. So that was the poem. Kenneth Boulding understood what Lotfi Zadeh did in this talk, because it was the first time that Lotfi Zadeh or anybody in electrical engineering said, we need more than only input and output. What we need is this concept of state. And here we need U is the input, Y is the output, and S is the state. It's the third variable. And because of that, we need, of course, two equations for system theory for identifying systems. So this was a generalization of system theory by Lotfi Zadeh. It was the first generalization. And then, to come to the end of this development, in 1962, he wrote a paper, From Circuit Theory to System Theory. It was an anniversary of the IRE. And what he wrote here, don't read it all. The important sentence is the red one. What he said in this paper is that we are system theorists, and we are identifying systems, and the most complex systems we can identify, but we cannot identify them all. And the most important systems we have to identify is biological systems, and we have not the mathematical tools to do that. And then he said, we need a radically different kind of mathematics, the mathematics of fuzzy or cloudy quantities, which are not describable in terms of probability distributions. So here's the first time he said, we need a new theory, and he said, maybe cloudy or fuzzy is a concept I will use, but 3 years later he will establish the theory. At that time he does not know what kind of theory he will establish. Can I have 5 minutes more? Three? Okay, he gave a talk in 1964 in Ohio. It was a military air base. I asked him, what was the title of the talk? Is there a paper of this talk? He said, no, I don't know what I said. I think it was a kind of secret. Maybe because he's 93 now, he doesn't know, but I think he doesn't want to say what kind of talk he gave. So he traveled to Ohio from Berkeley, and he had a stop in New York, and he met, he wanted to meet his parents. They were in New York in that time too, and they wanted to have dinner together, and that dinner was canceled. And the myth of the establishment of fuzzy set theory is he was at the airport, and he asked, when will the next flight go? And then the man said, oh, it will be maybe at that time. And then he thought, okay, that is very fuzzy, and let's establish fuzzy set theory. I think that's not true. But many, many people write that in their books. So I thought, okay, what did he do in that time? And there is a paper. I show you what kind of paper, and then I will stop. There's this problem. You know, I said he gave a talk in pattern recognition. He was not an expert in pattern recognition. He never did pattern recognition, but pattern recognition was a subject in the time computers should do pattern recognition. That was the time of the perceptron. So it was a thing to give a talk. So he was invited to give a talk, and his idea was, okay, we have a pattern. This is not working anymore. So we have the pattern there, this square or whatever it is, name is X. And you have to decide, or the machine has to decide, is it an O or is it a D? And the machine can say, yes, it is an O, or yes, it is a D. But maybe it's better, it's his idea, to say, okay, it's an O with a membership degree, mu O, between 0 and 1, and it is a D with a membership degree, mu D, between 0 and 1. So that was his small idea. And you see the text, he wrote this here, and it's interesting where this text comes from. This text comes from this memo. It's written in 1964. It's a RAND memo. It's a government, close to a government organization. It's a kind of research organization that was kind of secret. This memo was not free, available in that time, of course. And you see the authors are Richard Bellman, Robert Kalaba, and Lotfizadeh. Lotfizadeh is the third because he was not with RAND. He was at Berkeley University, but Richard Bellman was with RAND, and he was his close friend. So they published the paper written by Lotfizadeh under these three names. I'm sure about that because in September of the same year, we have this letter from Bellman, who was editor of the Journal of Mathematical Analysis and Applications, to Lotfizadeh. And he writes, "Dear Lotfizadeh, I think that the paper is extremely interesting, and I would like to publish it in this journal." So it was not his paper, it was a paper of Lotfizadeh. And in 1966, this paper appeared, Abstraction and Pattern Classification. In the title, you don't see that it is fuzzy set theory, but the content is an introduction into fuzzy set theory. And then, yeah, I have to stop. This paper I showed you already in 1965 is the famous first journal paper, fuzzy sets, and here he's showing all the definitions of fuzzy set theory you can find today in all the books. So I'm sorry, I have to stop here. If you have questions, I can talk for another half an hour, but I will stop here. Thank you very much.